Hey, welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping Podcast. I am your host, Greg Lehman. I'm here with my wonderful wife, Kara Jo.
Hello, hello.
And this is episode 10. So we actually recorded episode 9 a couple weeks ago. And then we're recording episode 10 right now, obviously. It's October
24th.
October 24th. We're going to release both of these together. So, I mean, if you're listening to this, then episode 9 is also out. But we thought we would do episode 9 was about our situation with Hurricane Ida and just kind of a little woe is me tale. And I thought it'd be nice to back it up right away with an actual beekeeping podcast.
We talked about beekeeping in the last podcast, how we moved the bees, how the movement affected the bees, but we also talk about how we lost the farm.
Yeah. So either way, this episode is going to be all about beekeeping, or mostly about beekeeping. Maybe a little drinking, because we got some
always
beer bottles in front of us. I like that Kara just came over with three bottles.
I was like, what are we drinking? Which one are we cracking first? which one are we cracking first?
So we're gonna crack this beautiful beer from the Referent. It's called Palms Pennyoc. P-O-M-E-S. Palms? Pomace? Pomace?
Is it like pumice?
P-O-M-E-S. And then the P-E-N-Y-E-A-C-H.
Pennyoc. I can't follow that at all.
I'll tell you what I can read. It's a spontaneously fermented ale aged in oak barrels with apple juice and honey added.
So crack.
That's why we grabbed this beer. So anyway, we're going to talk this episode about really like winter prep, but a lot to do with what we're currently doing to handle our mite situation. We have some really high Varroa mite counts. And in a previous episode, we talked about Varroa mites and just the importance of checking them and, I don't know, everything and anything that we could think of at the time about mites. But this one is actually going to be about, like, what are we currently doing? What is the situation we're currently in? How we're reacting to get them in the winter. But when you think about beekeeping, Kara, like, beekeeping is basically winter prep.
All year long.
The first things you do in the spring is to build up that hive enough that you can be prepared going into winter. So like every single decision you make as a beekeeper is about winter prep, at least for us. There's people that are just, everything is about making honey. And then after they take their honey, it's okay, I guess we'll prep these bees. But there's a lot of people that also just buy bees every year because they never overwinter.
I don't know if it's not about winter prep. It's about future. In the spring, it's not winter prep, but it's winter vision.
That beer's good.
Oh, I haven't tried it yet.
Sorry. That was yummy.
Whatever is in it is good.
Yeah, it's good. You definitely get like the apple juice kind of thing coming through, like real champagne-y finish.
Well, Referent, they condition all their bottles with honey?
Yeah, I think this one is honey added in the barrels, and then everything's bottle conditioned with honey. I don't even think they put that on the label. Maybe they do. Cool. Anyway, that beer is awesome.
So we're getting back on our feet. We're starting to get back on our feet.
Yeah. So we're settled. We've been in this new house on this new farm now for
a month and a half.
Yeah, give or take 6 weeks. All our bees are here. Almost all our bees. We got a couple hives elsewhere, but 90% of our bees are here, along with our chickens and ourselves. And we're getting some like Kara Jo stuff done. That's a big step for us.
It's huge step.
Into holidays, like, dude, Kara Jo, holidays is big. So
yeah, if you're
it's
looking.
Tough. Like you get, I don't want to talk about the Ida situation, but it's tough. You get busted out of a house. You get ripped out of a place that you like do things at. And then doing those things that you used to do is not easy.
No, it really was. It was way harder than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was like shocked at how hard it was.
Emotionally, but also just like the physical habit of doing things and then not having things in the same positions. And
also
not being able to find stuff.
Not nowhere. I was like, oh, I'll make soap. And I'm like, wait, where's my scale? And then it was just like oh wait, I don't have a scale. And then somebody asked me to make something for them. And I was like, sure, I can make it. And then I was like, wait, I don't have these ingredients to make this. So I'm actually right now when the podcast is over, we're going to make some dish soap. I make a bar dish soap. I just couldn't keep buying plastic bottles and then just tossing them. So I
Yeah, there was a, for a long time, you've been like, okay, what do we use plastic in that we can stop using plastic?
Shampoo was one. Yeah. Dish soap was one. I'm going to start working on, I have everything that I need to make a conditioner bar. I'm going to start testing that. I'm really excited about it. But
yeah, any listeners want to be a little tester, let us know.
Yeah.
We always like good testers, but we don't like yes men and
no,
women.
No,
we like
you can't get there.
Testers that are like, yo, this is our real feedback. So many people are like, it's so great. And we're like, eh, all right. And then other people are like, bing, 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 bing.
Yeah.
This is what I would improve. This is
and
what
then
I
go
this is what
through
I
multiple different versions of it. That's really how we've gotten this far, is because amazing testers. So yeah, so we're back up and running, and that's amazing. And if you're looking for unique and thoughtful gifts for the upcoming holidays, Cara Jo Skincare.
My little saleswoman.
It's a good one. You're it is. It just
you're
is.
A beast.
But yes.
So, all right. So we're getting back on our feet, which also meant, you know, we've been beekeeping. It took us about almost 4 weeks. It took us like a little over 3 weeks to be able to get back into the hives. And we got back in and we did some mite checks and mite testing. And oh, man, levels were through the roof.
Can you like do a bomb sound?
Yeah.
Sound right now?
Yeah, no. But, oh, oof, so bad. I should have loaded one up on my little soundboard here.
Well, because September is such an important month to test for mites, because this is the time where August, it's starting to rise, they're on the climb. September, you got to test, you got to treat.
So we test starting in June. So we'll test June, July, August, September. And we tested our hives in the beginning of August and then didn't test them again until the 24th of September. So really, we basically skipped one testing, but that one test at the very end of August, very beginning of September, is really the most important test you have. But our heads were elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's an important time to treat
if
the tests are high.
So we, all year, our hives have been, I mean, just so beautiful. Our mite test, so all right, we talked about this in a previous podcast, but I'll just, whatever, skim over it real quick. When we say mite test, the way we do it is you take a sample of about 300 bees. It's about a half a cup of bees. Half a cup? Yeah, I think it's a half a cup. About a half a cup of bees, and you unfortunately have to kill them. We dip them into a solution of Dawn dish soap and water. I think it's like 1 tablespoon per gallon of water, maybe. Or like 2 I don't know. Look at it. Randy Oliver, scientificbeekeeping.com. He's the dude. We've literally followed his lead for years since we started. I mean, you can do a sugar shake where you're putting powdered sugar on the bees and knocking the mites off. That is a way that you may be keeping them alive. Some studies have shown that they still die. Like basically you're suffocating them when you do that.
Because bees don't have lungs, right? They breathe through their skin or whatever, or something like that.
I don't know. You're putting me on the spot with that one, but it's definitely like a pretty, it's interesting. And you clog their, you're like clogging their lungs, but it's not their lungs.
Something like that.
Yeah. So anyway, so we did that originally. We realized it's not that accurate. So we did alcohol washes, and then we used windshield wiper fluid, and now Dawn dish soap. And Dawn dish soap definitely works the best for us so far. We reuse it over and over again.
Because also with mite testing, you're like, I don't know, did I do it right? Is this accurate?
Yeah, you get 0000 numbers, and you're like, am I doing something wrong? Well, we did not get zero numbers. We
not
got
at all.
So, all right. Our threshold that we're looking for is like 1, maybe 2%. So in a sample of 300 bees, if there's 3 or less mites, that would be under 1%. 6 or less mites would be under 2%. We're looking for to keep it under those numbers. All year, all summer, numbers were great, always under 3. Then we get, and literally we had 60, we had 50. Our whole apiary averaged to about 25 mites per hive. Crazy high numbers. So what did we do? We have never, one time we've used Formic Pro in the past. We typically just use oxalic acid in a dribble or a vaporization. It wasn't feasible. We didn't have a generator. We have, this apiary is new for us. You can't just plug in a extension cord and run it out to it. It would take a little bit more. So we decided we were going to use Formic Pro. Formic Pro is an organic method of treating for mites. And you put these strips in the hive. We decided because the numbers were so high, we were going to do a 14-day treatment, which means you're taking like these two pads, you put them in, or these two strips, you put them in the brood chamber. The other option is you do a 10-day treatment with one strip, and then you follow it up with another 10-day with the other strip. So we did it. We knew that there are some studies that have shown, and some just real world experience with people we know that has shown, when you use formic, there may be some superseding that happens, especially with older queens. We don't have any options. We have to act immediately. So we did it. We went back in 14 days later or 15 days later, and we tested again, and our mite levels dropped by about 60%. But that still means we are over that 1-2% threshold. So, oh man, like, such a kick in the balls.
And it's also, I think, an important thing to note here is that you want to knock down your mite loads before this point. I mean, we couldn't, but yeah. you want to knock them down before this point and do good care before the end of October, because you want the bees who are making and raising the winter bees to be your healthiest bees, so you can have the healthiest bees going into winter.
So honeybees is really interesting. Winter bees are biologically different than summer bees. Winter bees are prepared to, I don't even know the very specifics of it. They're fatter. They literally have more of a fat content of vitellogenin. You stop it right now.
Go ahead.
How do you say it, Carrie
No,
jo?
Okay. So this is the whole thing is, if you listen to prior podcasts, I always said vitagelin, right? I think that's what I said.
Yeah, but it's not vitagelin. It's like vitalogelin. Right.
But then Robin Underwood was at our last beekeepers meeting.
Robin Underwood is a
research scientist
at Penn State University, doing amazing work with beekeeping.
Yeah, and treating mites and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she's saying it totally different. And I was like, oh shit, I've been saying it wrong this whole time. But it is something like vitellogenin.
It's essentially like the fat body, the life of the bee.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know if it's fat body, because
it's not fat body.
The queen has the highest degree, and then it's, I don't know if it's the marker, but they found correlation between, like, bees are born with like a high amount, and then as there's a shift and it decreases, they change jobs and they change roles in the hives. And that's like, and then a forager bee is its last job and it has the least amount of
vitellogenin previously.
Live what, like 45 days or something
exactly,
like that?
Give or take.
But winter bees can live up to 6 months.
Yeah. And, you know, they're not using all of their life. You know, bees literally, honeybees literally work themselves to death. These bees are inside the hive, trying to conserve as much energy as they can. And then, crazy enough, they actually feed the larva. So typically in the summer, in the spring, bee bread is fed to larva. It's a combination of like some wax, some saliva and pollen. And it's like this little fermented patty cake that they make. And that might not be present in the hive in the winter. And the bees, actually these winter bees, can feed the proteins from the vitellogenin into the honeybee larvae, and that's what gets them through until springtime when they have pollen sources. Crazy.
Yeah. I didn't know that until.
Yeah. It's wild.
And I probably.
But it makes. So here's the thing. Mites feed on the same stuff.
Yeah. They feed on the fat body of the honeybee.
And that fat body is what is being used to extract the proteins out of that fat body, which is being fed to the larva. So you really need these winter bees to be as healthy as possible with as few of these parasites on them, so they can be strong, they can survive winter. Also, they're getting their life force eaten out of them, sucked out of them, which means they can't fight diseases easily. They, you know, don't have as good of gut health. All these problems that arise from the varroa mite. I mean, if you went to hibernate, let's not hibernate, but say you went to go, you know, to sleep for a winter, or try to stay inside for a winter.
Stay warm for the winter. Stay warm. Is really what they're
and
doing.
And you had a squirrel chewing at your rib cage, sucking the life out of you. You'd have a hard time surviving too. You know,
it's pretty accurate depiction of what's happening.
So,
so the point
we're seeing
is
these huge numbers. You want to
go into the winter with not, like, you know, September is a key month.
Yeah,
is basically
key.
That we missed.
So we treat, we test. We're still getting high numbers. I mean, knocked down a lot, which, you know, makes you feel a little bit good. So we went back, and actually, what did we do this? Two nights ago? Last night?
Time is... No, it wasn't last night. It was two nights
ago. Two nights ago, we went in and we did an oxalic acid vaporization. We actually got a generator and hauled it out to the apiary. Plugged in, we have a vaporization gun. I mean...
Tell them about that. This is interesting.
Yeah, so I think the commercial version of what we have is called ProVap, or ProVape. It's like $500 or $600. But somebody that understands some electrical connections and can, you know, put something together, there are a ton of plans out there. I think we paid $150 for a dude to make them in Florida, and he made us one. It took like 5 weeks or so for him to get it back to us, but we ordered it a couple years ago and it's so much better.
But we used to have two gas masks and we can go out there and now we have one. And I was like, I can't be anywhere near that Greg at the gas mask. And I was like, kind of trying to help. And so
you need a mask.
You can't. Because I started it was
oxalic acid. It like crystallizes in your lungs. It's super bad for you.
Yep. Stay away.
So we did that. And now we're just trying to write some of these queen situations. So we'll go back in a month and do another vape. And we'll go back probably again in December and do a vape. In previous years, when our numbers have gone into winter, our Varroa numbers have gone into winter pretty low. We just do one vaporization when we know there's no brood present, knock down any mites. And it was typically between Thanksgiving and Christmas we would do this. We're being a little bit more vigilant because we have these high numbers. So I think we'll do it around Thanksgiving, then we'll do it again around Christmas.
Yeah, we have to. So I think, so formic acid, when you put it in, it goes underneath the capped brood, right? So it is treating...
Yeah. So formic it does penetrate into the cappings and will kill Varroa inside of the cappings.
But like...
Oxalic does not do that. Oxalic is just surface, so it won't penetrate those caps.
So... Formic, because did we finish talking about the supersedure situation? So like I don't think we'd ever really want to do formic this late in the season again. We had because of our situation, but
yeah, formic in like September, it's weather dependent. It needs to be like below 80 degrees, give or take, something like that. Look it up. Formic's website actually has a really great tutorial. But yeah, ideally you do that in September, and then if you have some superseedings happen, cool, there's plenty of drones out there to get mated queens.
Yeah, there's,
and then going into winter with a freshly mated queen is the best.
Yeah,
they come out of winter into spring just laying like crazy, and they're just, you know, it's better that way. I love those fall mated queens.
So we did have a situation and it was like swarm, but it was only swarm cells. I'm guessing because they already had the queen cups made that they just decided to supersede with like quote unquote swarm cells at the bottom of the comb.
Yeah, it was more like it kind of in a couple of the hives, it looked more like emergency cells, so to speak. Most of them were in the middle of the frames, like you would expect with supersedure, but yeah, there were some on the bottom that trick somebody into thinking it was a swarm cell.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
So now that one hive, we don't know. Do they have we should have captured that queen. We saw the queen and we saw the swarm cells. We should have captured that queen right away.
Yeah, we should have caged her immediately. Yeah. We could have kept her in there even caged.
Yeah. But now, we don't know what's going on in that hive because
we saw hatched out queen cells and chewed
one
out.
One hatched out queen cell and chewed out cells.
Yeah. So we know like a virgin
was there
because one hatched properly and then you can tell when they've killed their sisters.
But like, can she get mated? Is she mated? Yeah, did she make it back?
A handful of drones. That's the scary part right now.
Which is also interesting at this time because queens stop laying.
So remember a few years ago?
Yeah.
And like in the
beginning, when we had like a lot of hives, we started noticing this.
So I remember a few years ago when we had really stepped up from just like a handful of hives to like, I think maybe we had 10 or so or six. And you can hear Duncan barking. It was like beginning of October and we're going and just, you know, checking everybody out, knocking boxes down, making sure they have enough feed or have enough syrup. Have enough honey going into winter. And we're like, I'm like, Kara, dude, there's no queens. There's no eggs anywhere. Like, there's no brood. So we were
in
able,
so many of the hives.
So we took frames that had eggs from other hives and we put it in these hives. And that's like the nice trick to do.
If you catch it early enough, if you still have brood. Yeah.
So you put a frame of fresh eggs, and then if they immediately go to turn those eggs into queen cells, you know there's no queen. When we first did this, they didn't turn any of them into queen cells, and we went like, oh man, I guess there's a queen. She just stopped laying earlier than we thought.
Well, also our mentor Vince was like, yeah, you probably just stop laying, or maybe you have some virgin queens in there. But it's tough at this time to figure it out because like queens are not laying.
Yeah, we're
just
not getting
the
queen shipped from Hawaii or California right now. You know, that's not happening.
So then oxalic is better. I guess it can harm the brood, oxalic acid.
I mean, I think every single treatment, there are some negative side effects. Right. Oxalic, they say, can, some studies have shown it can kill a small percentage of brood.
And it also cannot get underneath the cappings.
Right.
So normally when we do oxalic acid, we do a...
like a scheduled treatment of every 5 days we'll do it.
Because the brood hatches out and then we can treat the new brood. But when there's no brood...
One time,
knock them down.
Yeah, it's like 99% get knocked off, something like that.
Which I don't think I could handle a whole schedule of oxalic now. I mean, we'd have to do it, but we don't have to because there's no brood.
So we did that. It was interesting. We had two hives totally abscond on us. We talked about it a little bit last podcast, but we had to move these hives multiple times because of Hurricane Ida, and we lost a lot of foragers. We know we lost a lot. There were just bees that we were never able to get them in the hive when we moved them at 10 o'clock at night the first time. They were like hanging out on the bottom of the hive. And then we put them on a trailer. We drive them. They just, you know,
they went through a hurricane.
Literally, they went through a hurricane. So we lost so many foragers. So some of these hives that we thought, really all of these hives, when we, August 31st, I would have said, dude, all of our hives are going to overwinter. Like they're looking great. The numbers are low. And then storm Ida happens. We lose all these hives. Now I'm like, dude, if we get through, if 50% of these get through winter, I'll be stoked.
But the thing is, and this is always a consolation when you lose hives, is you have the hardware. So we
so
were
many
able,
built out frames, so many boxes,
because
new boxes
we moved
we made
them,
and
we
painted.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But I think I keep saying this and you haven't answered me. So let's talk about it right now. Like irradiating our equipment next year. Do you want to talk about irradiation? Tell people.
Yeah. I mean, if you are worried about chalk brood or some, like there's a couple diseases,
like viruses
that will just last forever.
Like you can't freeze them out. Right.
Or club. Somebody organizes with our beekeepers club. They organize a trip where there's like literally like a nuclear facility that does irradiation, and we bring pallets of equipment and they'll irradiate it.
Can you irradiate comb?
Yes. Yeah. People bring their honey. Like full frames that have honey on them too. It's a whole thing. I mean, I get it. If you have like foul brood or something, I mean, you really got to burn your equipment or get it irradiated. But I mean, even so, it's tough to just like hold on to that equipment before you can get it irradiated. It's not something you just like go to a store and get done.
I'm just thinking like we have, like if we have these high mite loads, right? And we have viruses, I wonder how long that sticks around. So just something to think about, I guess.
Yeah. We should look into it more because I mean, we're in a situation that, yeah. So I was saying we had two hives abscond that we saw. They were low. I think they lost a lot of foragers. They got some robbing happened. They were, you know, battling. Maybe they lost the queen and she never got mated. But it was when I went back in the notes, those two hives specifically were ones that were showing signs of mite issues. One, there was that Israeli acute paralysis virus, very present. It's literally like paralyzed bees that are bald. And we saw a bunch of them outside of the hive. And although Israeli paralysis virus is not varroa, spread through varroa, but a weakened bee that has been getting chewed on by varroa is more susceptible to falling for other diseases. So they are in a way linked.
So it's really easy to, once I learned about it, I spotted it right away.
Oh yeah, you spot it. So
they look
like shiny,
shiny, dark, like oily. And then also, there were a lot of bees on the ground, and they and I would pick them up and drop them, and they would just drop. They can't fly anymore.
Yeah.
So you can spot it pretty easily. But the one that did abscond was...
Yeah, and the other one had shown signs of some deformed wing virus, which is really the easiest just with a naked eye.
And that is mite.
And that is caused by, yeah, Varroa mites are the ones passing that virus on to the bees.
Are we ready for the next beer?
Yeah, maybe. I am. You are. Jeez.
Well, not crushing that down. You have one sip left.
One sip more than you.
Finish it. What's this one?
So this next beer is a little barrel-aged Saison that was a collaboration with Forest Main, the brewery I work with, for, and Mars Brewing out in Chicago. Little barrel-aged Saison with Brettanomyces. Brett, you have an opener over there?
You got it right here.
So anyway, all right. So we have two new, this is something I think everybody should do. We have two nucleus hives, 5-frame boxes. Each of them have 3 boxes, I think, right now. Mm-hmm. But we have two for this apiary that all year we use them as resource nukes. So we literally are, hold on, let me finish my sip so Kara pours some beer and doesn't drink it all.
I'm saving you half.
So we call them our resource nukes. And when we need brood, when we need to steal frames, when we need them to just make frames, we utilize these nukes. And right now we have two. They actually both have relatively new queens that are mated. We may need to merge those nukes into some full size hives that need help that don't have a queen, so we can make sure they overwinter. We also just caught a swarm.
We didn't just catch it, but well, we discovered it.
It was in our swarm trap. It's been there for, I think, about a month, give or take, maybe a little bit less. But I just caught this swarm just the other day, and oh man,
it's tiny.
Here's what happens. I go in.
That happened. Is that why it's so small?
So I go in and I put the ladder up. I check the swarm trap. I bring it down. There were some people that were hanging around that were like, let me see. So I brought it out of the tree and I lifted it up and I show them this feral hive that's in this swarm trap. And it's like, you know, really cool comb. We use these peat pots to make swarm traps. It's like a 15-gallon peat pot, something like that. And I make a lid for it, and they grow, they build the hive off of the lid. So you literally lift the lid up. Check our Instagram, mind your hives. And there's some video of it for sure. But when you lift it up, you can see the comb, and I show them it. So then I put it back up in the tree thinking, okay, I'm going to come back in like a couple days and do this. We get a real bad windstorm. I clearly didn't secure the trap up well enough. And when I came back a week later, it had fallen and we had some really cold nights.
Ah, that sucks.
And there was just a grapefruit sized cluster of bees in there. The queen had been laying, there was brood. All of that was dead. I mean, it chilled. There was no way they would be able to keep that just like open air, keep it warm. But luckily I was able to catch the queen. It was a whole thing. They actually like...
Oh, yeah. Swore. Tell the story because I never really heard it.
So I get the box off the floor. I set it up and I typically just like go through the comb and I'll catch the queen and then I'll like literally cut the comb out and put it into frames.
Rubber banded into frames.
While I'm doing that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get the queen clip. I go get the queen clip. I come back and the bees are gone and they're all flying around everywhere like a swarm. And they land 20 feet from me on a bush, and I go and I collect, I like knock a chunk of them onto a frame and immediately find the queen, lucky enough, clip her, hang a trap in that bush, collect the rest of them. And now we've moved them to another location. So they reorient their GPS.
Yeah. They're little, they're tiny,
but it just is like nothing right now is easy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so but mad at
we
myself.
We do have a queen. So that yeah, so
we
one...
have that extra queen and these two nukes is extra queens. So we right. have some, prepared.
Which is safe what you plans. Were saying before, quote unquote, winter prep, that it's winter vision. You always have winter vision. Yeah.
So what else are we doing? So I'm going to probably go in the hives tomorrow and just see about what the decision to merge and what to do exactly. And I'll figure it out tomorrow and then it's going to be kind of like rainy and cold for a little
luckily,
bit.
Yeah, so. Luckily tomorrow's the only nice day.
Yeah, knock on wood. What else are we doing? We're feeding. So again, they lost a ton of foragers. I think like some robbing happened. They're lighter than we expected. We always leave them. Most of these hives were left with four boxes. So they're mediums. We overwinter with three full mediums. Most of them have four, but they're running a little light right now. So we're feeding 2-to-1 syrup. So 2 parts sugar to 1 part water. Easy way is for every pound of sugar, it's 1 cup of water. So like 25-pound bag of sugar, 25 cups water is 2-to-1. We added for the first time, we added a supplement. So we added Hive Alive. Hive Alive, you hadn't heard of it before. I've heard of like certain supplements that are used like this, but I don't know if I'd ever heard of specifically Hive Alive. But it's like, maybe you can explain, it's a prebiotic.
Yeah, prebiotic.
Prebiotic
is like before it enters your digestive system or something like that. Probiotic is in your digestive system.
Okay.
Maybe. Let me look it up real quick.
So, all right. So there's no organic beekeeping standards for the United States. Shocker. So we follow the EU organic standards for beekeeping, and this is an organic feed that you can give. It's made mainly with seaweed. I think it's in like Ireland, the company is headquartered, but they use Irish seaweed, which has been proven to help with gut health. Gut health is so big. It kind of improves everything with the bees. There are specific studies that have shown a huge decrease in Nosema, which is like a gut health issue in bees. A lot of times if bees are like having bad diarrhea, you know, they have a type of Nosema, not something we've battled, but it just shows that it does in fact help their gut health. And then, you know, they claim a lot of like overwintering, percentages that, you know, 89% better overwintering, blah, blah, blah. I don't know about all that, but because our bees are just not in that good of a state right now, we're doing whatever we can to help them. So I'm like, yo, let's add this Hive Alive. Let's give them even more nutrients than maybe they need right now, just to help every little bit we can. You know what a prebiotic is?
Yeah, I know what it is. So probiotics are the bacteria. Prebiotics feed the healthy bacteria. Yeah.
Wow, cool. So yeah, Hive Alive.
So it's all about gut health.
I think I listened to somebody talk about it on Beekeeping Today podcast or beekeeping. I don't know. There's like 2 or 3 beekeeping podcasts that I listen to. And somebody was on it and I was like, cool, I'll try it. It's not that expensive. It's like 2 tablespoons per gallon or 2 teaspoons per gallon of syrup. So, you know, you don't need a ton. But
we got to give them a boost.
Whatever we can
add, giving them a boost as much as we can. So wait, did you say what was in it? I was researching.
I mean, its main ingredient is seaweed.
Oh yeah. You said Ireland and I thought that was weird. I was like, why is he saying Ireland?
I think I was saying Irish and then I went Ireland. Oh, you didn't let that go. He's coming right back for me.
Sparked my memory.
We get asked this quite a bit. How do we feed? It's funny. Like there's just certain things we do that we don't even think about.
Yeah, but we were also taught certain things.
But we were taught a stupid way to feed that just makes zero sense.
Oh, is that true?
With the dumb Ziploc bags.
Oh yeah, we did do that, and then you used so many
wasteful, stupid method.
Yes.
Ugh, so annoying. Our first teacher, or like first big teacher, was like, fill up Ziploc bags and then poke them with holes, and that's how they get it. You know, like, goddamn Ziploc bags you go through doing that. You really can't refill them. Yeah, whatever. It's easy to put them in with just a little shim, but like, no, dumb. Don't do that.
It's also harder.
It
is harder.
And like, sure enough, a Ziploc bag
more
opens
expensive.
Up and syrup pours everywhere. They're hard to fill. Just dumb.
Yeah.
So what we do is we put an inner cover down. We put another medium box over top of the inner cover. We take a mason jar. We poke some tiny holes in the mason jar. And we put the mason jar in that on top of the inner cover, over the inner cover hole. Boom. It's inside the hive. The bees can access it without leaving.
And you can sometimes put 2 jars in.
Oh, yeah, easily.
You need to invest.
You can put four jars in if you want to. And it is good when you're winter feeding. So when you're feeding going into winter, it's good to overload them with more syrup. If they have an abundance of syrup, they're more likely to store it. A small amount of syrup, they may just consume it and eat it. Like, oh, we need food. We'll just eat this instead. But give them a ton more and they go into storage mode, which we still need to get mason jars from somebody that helped us and got them out of our garage after the storm and washed them.
Yeah.
They were just like covered in poop water, but we need to get them back because we need to double up the amount in the apiary now.
For sure.
So, also bees are cold blooded. What does that mean? It means when they ingest something, they become the temperature of what they ingested. So if they can't fly and move, if they are, I think it's like 50 degrees.
Like below 54 or something?
Yeah. So if you're feeding them syrup outside of a hive and it's 40 degrees outside, that syrup is going to be 40 degrees. They won't be able to eat it. If you put that syrup inside the hive, the heat from the hive itself is going to keep the temperature of that syrup higher. And say a day like tomorrow, late tomorrow, the next day, it's cold, it's rainy, they're not flying. Guess what? They can still get all that syrup and store it. I can't stand that when people do outside feeders. People are like, oh, it's more than 100 feet from my hive, it's fine. Like, here's the deal. We have neighbors that beekeep. I don't want my bees eating sugar syrup when I don't know they're eating sugar syrup. Like, they may be visiting the neighbor's syrup thing. I've even seen people in the middle of summer say they're feeding their bees. And I'm like, you're just making fake honey. Like, that's absurd. And even if you don't mind your fake honey, I don't want fake honey. So I'd rather my bees have to work a little harder to get sugar than just go to the neighbor's house and beat up their bees and take it. Like, come on.
Is that happening in like specific, like right where we are? I can't imagine why anybody would need to feed their bees in the summer.
I don't get it either, but I dumb internet, stupid internet groups, people that start talking and I just like, I can't chime in on this. This is ridiculous.
Got it.
But, the only thing is you need to have some extra boxes, you know, but come wintertime, you should all have at least one extra box for every hive. So we like to feed inside. Helps against robbing. It's just such an easier way to do it. And then also you just pop the top off. You grab that mason jar. There's not many bees up there. Like we did it this morning when it was probably 45, 50 degrees. We had hoodies on and we went and did it like super, super easy. Feed inside your hives. Anyway.
And then we got to store everything.
Yeah. So we knocked the hives boxes down. So a lot of, some of them still had like, I think some had six boxes on them still.
So we also took,
You're going to talk about the supers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go for it.
We took, any honey that we weren't pulling that we were leaving for the hive. We put the inner cover down and then we put a honey super on top so that they could take the honey and move it down into the hive.
So if you're putting frames of honey above an inner cover, those bees will actually go get that and bring it down. They won't store above the inner cover. It's really interesting. So rather than feed, we go, okay, take your stuff, move it down into the, you know, bottom three boxes. Once you eat all that, we'll replace it with syrup. Like
I think like eight frames of just like empty comb today.
And you want to get rid of that comb because it's once it's empty, especially it's a place that like small hive beetles and some pests and stuff can go. So what we do is we get those hives, they empty them out, we bring them and we do a 3-day freeze. So we freeze all of our hives for about 3 days. It kills any of the eggs that are on there, small hive beetle, wax moth, just makes me feel a little safer. And then we store them. Couple ways you can store. Oh, I can't remember the name of the BT stuff that we get.
The specific wax name. Moth stuff?
Yeah.
I can be like the research person on this.
So prior years we've done, we just stored them in bins, all the frames that are built out in bins, and we use some wax moth crystals. There's a specific type you need. It starts with the chemical starts with a P as in Paul. So it's like, if you look up beekeeping wax moth crystals, it'll come up. But just make sure it has the P in it. But then there's also a spray. It's just that you put it, this concentrate in a spray bottle with some water and like two sprays on each side of the frame. And it is an organic, it's a bacteria that targets wax moth larva, and that wax moth larva can't grow.
Paramoth?
Paramoth is the
crystal.
Crystal. That's the P.
Okay.
Well, a paramoth is the
brand.
Brand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But don't buy the brand.
Oh, so what is the ingredient you're looking for?
It starts with a P. Anyway, but there's a spray. I'll have to post a picture of it or something. That's really easy. That some friends of ours use, and they really like it. And it makes it so you can store them just like in your basement. You know, you just got to protect to make sure that mice can't get in, because they may be interested in some leftover honey and pollen on those frames. But you can store them in a warmer area and not worry about wax moths, which is what will just absolutely destroy all of your beautiful built wax.
And well,
in the wintertime.
So here's some interesting facts about wax moths is that one, they pupate in the wood. So the larva eats into your hardware. So they ruin your boxes, your wooden frames, and they burrow in, and then they spin the cocoon in the wood. And then they actually don't eat the beeswax because there's not enough nutrient in the beeswax, but they eat the cocoon casings and the pollen. And that's, they don't eat, like if it was pure beeswax, they wouldn't eat it.
But they chew through it all, and you ever see a wax moth infested frame? Is gnarly. They're toast. I got it.
It's called, it's in my notes, paradichlorobenzene.
Paradichlorobenzene?
Yeah, and then
nailed it.
Vince said after you use it and like store them for the winter, air out your frames for a day.
It is
before putting
noticeable.
Them back
it's a noticeable
into
smell. It smells like grandma closet.
The hives.
Grandma closet smell.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that either in my home. We had some frames that were in a freezer in our garage.
In our beekeeping fridge.
Yeah, in our beekeeping fridge. Rest in peace, beekeeping fridge. Fridge got flipped over in the flood, got trashed. So we just like took these frames out, put them in a couple boxes.
We set them out for days and days and days.
Yeah, but they just, being in this gnarly, wet, gross environment, they grew a bunch of mold on them. So,
which we only just discovered the other day.
Yeah, we had like a stack of boxes. We didn't even realize, you know, everything's a blur. But so I did. Here's what's great. Bees, dude, they're used to building hives in like trees, like rotting places. They'll clean that shit up. So what I did is we have a chest freezer. I just took the frames that had mold on them went in last. I scraped off as much as I could. They went in last, and then they'll stay in the freezer until springtime. And then I'll put them back in hives and let the bees clean it up. It's not a big deal. Just like, you know, give them some penicillin. Carrie, you're saying you got
to
pee?
I have to pee so bad. So you either need to mic.
All these beers you're cracking.
Or we need to wrap this up.
We'll take a quick break, or like 5 minutes. You good?
I can't. No, that's right. How bad it is. Carrie's, otherwise, I wouldn't say anything.
You know what? You do this. I'll talk about hive wraps and some candy cakes
cool.
That we're making.
Mute me.
You're muted. Now you're muted. All right, we got rid of her. Let's talk about Kara Jo a little bit here. She's a wonderful human being. We should all strive to be as perfect as her. Okay, she's gone. Let's tell the truth. No. All right, so, but yeah, if you have some frames that have some mold on them, it's really not that big a deal. You just don't want it to grow and get worse. But like the bees can clean up a lot more than you realize. What do we do for wintertime? So, this is the setup that has worked best for us going into winter. There's all kinds of different options for you. We use a hive wrap. There are these wraps that are literally made for beekeeping. It's just a really thin layer of insulation. The whole point of it, for the way we use it, is not so much for the insulation, because it has an R value, but it's not a ton. It's for the wind blockage. So it covers three medium boxes. We wrap it up. We just tape it. It's reusable every year. And it just seals all of the outside of the hive so that wind isn't crushing the hive. They're also black, so they absorb some heat from the winter sun, which is nice. But it, again, I'm not doing it for insulation value. The bees will do that themselves. You just got to make sure they have enough food. I take I make candy cakes, sugar cakes. So it's literally 10 to 1, I think, sugar to water. Basically, it's like for 25 pounds of sugar, I'll only use a little under 6 cups of water. It's like 5.6 cups of water. It's almost essentially like 5 pounds of sugar per cup of water. And it's, you know, obviously it's not a very liquid solution. Mix that all up. And then we put that onto paper plates, let it harden. It takes about a day, let it harden. And then that thin disc, you know, picture a paper plate hardened, we put in the top of the hive. So that goes on the very top. So in case the bees eat through their syrup reserves or their honey reserves, they have that dry sugar. Once winter hits, you can't feed syrup. Like I said, it can't be below 50 or so degrees, but they would be able to eat the dry sugar in case of emergency pretty much. And also it's a nice way to tell in the springtime. You can go out if you have a warm day in February, you crack the lid and you can look and see, have they started eating the sugar patty yet? And if they haven't, you know, all right, cool. I see some bees, they're alive. They haven't eaten the sugar patty. Sweet. We're good. So it's a nice like little safe play. So I put the sugar patty down, and then above that is we have a shim. That shim has hardware cloth on the bottom of it. So shim, just like think of a bee box, like a third the height of a bee box. Literally at one point I cut bee boxes into thirds to make shims. Put some hardware cloth below it. We fill that up with pine shavings. That's going to collect excess moisture. You want some moisture dripping down the sides of the hive. That's how they get a lot of their water, probably most of their water in the wintertime. But just in case there's too much moisture and we have some really warm winters that have been hitting us over the past few years, we have this quote-unquote quilt of, you know, newspaper shavings, pine shavings, just some stuff to absorb water.
And it gets pretty wet.
Yeah, yeah. It depends on the hive, but like you definitely will see that they collect some moisture. And actually, the sugar patty collects a little bit of moisture too. So that acts as a little moisture collector. And then a lid, and we're done. That's it. If your bees have the population to keep themselves warm and they have the food to keep themselves alive, they're going to survive. Unless they are diseased and they have too much of a mite load that's, you know, like I said, a squirrel sucking on their ribs and eating the life out of them. There's no direct equation, but like 60 to 90 pounds of stores is what I look for in all of our hives going into winter. And I'm just doing that by doing a little pickup test. You know, some people do weigh their hives. I'm picking it up going, oh, that box feels pretty full. Great. At this point, we're probably not going to go into the bottom three boxes of the hives that we know are queen right. We let them propolize as many cracks as possible, again, to help with wind pressure and help it keep with insulation. I'm not going to want to go into the brood chamber at all. So I don't want to crack boxes and look in. I want them to seal that thing up until March when we go in and we say hi to them, pop a bottle of champagne and celebrate. Yeah. Right.
By the way, there were chickens loose when I, so I had to run outside. I'm like, guys, good thing I'm like a ninja chicken catcher.
Was it Blue and who else?
Blondie.
Oh, Blondie? I was
like, guys, you can't be out. And they're like, we're sorry.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you make sure they've got enough food. You put a little sugar cake in there, some insulation, and those things are.
And you know what?
On their own.
So, it is what it is, right? We're at where we're at. But we did say the other day, any hives that survive this stress.
Oh, yeah.
They're badass. That's good stock.
They're badass bees.
Yeah.
They're that's badass good genetics.
Stock. Yeah.
Which we've been working on our queen genetics for 6 years, legitimately, yeah. Like monitoring how they are, breeding from the stock that we like. And it's super sad. We lost a couple queens in this mix that we loved. And it's not their fault. It's, you know, human pressure and human situations and
climate change.
Climate change.
Yeah.
And it's really sad, but hey, I mean, you know, the ones that can survive, like Kara's saying, I mean, that is a notch. Like, they immediately become black belts. Like, they are just,
and you just
ninja bees.
You just do what you can. You pivot. And what? Somebody said, who was it? Was it Jeff Eckel? He's one of the PA
inspectors.
Yeah, beekeeping inspectors. He's, I don't know if it was him, but you're not a bad beekeeper. Just because you get a disease or you have like a stressor in your hive doesn't make you a bad beekeeper. It's the decisions you make after you discover this issue. That's what makes you either a good beekeeper or a bad beekeeper, which I think that's a good way to put it.
I think it's great too. Oh, here, I have a little story for you, Kara. So this is becoming a very common trend. People come up to me, or, you know, probably to us. I think you have this too. And they're like, hey, I want to get into beekeeping. Oh, I am looking for a hobby and I want to be a beekeeper. And I'm like, oh, cool. It's like keeping honeybees. I don't know.
We've talked about this before.
It's not really a hobby.
It's also not necessarily.
It can be a hobby.
We don't need more beekeepers.
But I love this analogy. I don't know if I've said it before, but it's how I respond to people where I say, here's the saying, and it's something like this. I think I botch it a bit, but cheese making is a hobby. Owning bees, being a beekeeper, is more like owning the cow, not making the cheese. It's a little bit more intensive than a hobby. And bad beekeepers are bad for the environment.
Right.
So somebody that's not willing to take a class, get a mentor, read, study, listen to Mind Your Hive's beekeeping. people that aren't willing to take those steps, at no fault of their own, maybe, you know? I mean, life gets in the way. It's a very intensive, quote-unquote, hobby.
Yeah.
If they don't have the commitment to do that, I'd just really steer them away from beekeeping. Steer them into get some native a native bee garden, do some things like that, plant native trees. But you don't need to get bees.
Right. We don't need more beekeepers. We need better beekeepers.
Yeah. And we hope that what we're doing here and what we're talking about can help make people
promote
better beekeepers.
That. Yeah.
And
that's the only reason we're doing this. I don't know.
We like to hear ourselves talk.
Yeah. And we like to drink beer.
Yeah. Shout out to Mars Brewing in Chicago. Shout out, as always, to Referend. They are probably the most often drank beer on this podcast.
I think so. And every single time I'm like, we need to visit them, and we still haven't. But I think we're getting closer to the being.
And we got
to
see
that.
Amy. Shout out to Amy. We got to see her. I got to see her a couple weeks ago. She stopped into the brewery. I really miss James and Melissa over at Referend. But we've said to them before, like, whenever we drink one of their bottles, we feel like it's like a celebration, just because we always would save Referend bottles for special occasions. So I feel like every time we're doing a podcast, it's like a little bit of a special occasion where we want to drink something fancy.
And they're using honey.
Hell yeah.
So.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Let us know what questions you have, dude. Right now, I mean, a lot of people are reaching out, and I'm super happy to talk beekeeping and help people through situations.
Also, winter is a good time to maybe do some podcasts and answer some questions for the upcoming spring.
That's rad. Yeah, I agree.
We're just going to light a fire and drink some beer and talk about stuff.
I think a chicken just flew out of the coop again.
Let's go get her.
Let's go play with our chickens. They clearly want to hang out with us.
Yeah.
Thank you, as always, for listening. Check out carajoskincare.com. Shout out to some partners that we have. Dave's Backyard Farm in Elkins Park, carrying Carajo Skincare, carrying our honey.
Yeah, Taproot Farms.
Taproot Farms offering our honey as their CSA. We are making our special recipe of garlic hot honey. All the garlic and all of the special peppers were grown by Everwild Farm in Horsham, Pennsylvania. Yeah. We're really excited to give some gifts to some people that were really great to us during our time. And that gift is totally going to be some hot honey. And I'm excited to give it to people as a thank you.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, but thank you again for listening. If you got this far,
you're a rock star.
We love you.
Be well, guys.
Yes. Be well. Cheers.